Welcome to Carittles. This week, your valuable secondary network. The questions this cast answers are, how can I increase my network fast? How should I use other people's relationships? And what should I watch out for when using other people's relationship?
Folks, if you've been thinking about coming to a conference, Charlotte, North Carolina will be in person November 16th and 17th with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator Conference. And that will actually be, I think, our last public conference in person of the year. So if you're interested in seeing us in person this year, come to Charlotte on November 16th and 17th, Effective Manager and Effective Communicator.
Andrew, you've been recording Carittles Cast for what, 2 months?
Yeah.
Many times have we said careers are built on results and relationships in 2 months? Like 20?
Yeah,
every single time. Episode, right?
Pretty much every paragraph.
Yeah. We tell you to build a network because results and relationships are the foundations to that successful career. And using relationships to solve problems or to help other people is what you're supposed to be doing with that network. You are supposed to actually use it to solve your problems, to help other people, to help solve other people's problems. It's not a collection. It's not a, like, I've got the biggest network. If you never use it, it's useless. So you're supposed to be using it. But there are good ways to use it and bad ways to use it. And in this cast, we're going to talk about how to do it well.
Yeah. So our outline for today is your secondary network. We'll talk about what that is. Your network is a golden goose and professionalism always.
Exactly. So despite there being not negative connotations with the idea of using people or using people's relationships.
Oh, yeah.
We don't mean it in a negative way. There just isn't a better verb for it. But anytime you need advice or a new perspective or technical know-how or a new job, we keep telling you, go ask your network. That's what your network is for. But what most people think about when we say that is the people they know, or even more limited, it's just the people around them, the people they see most often.
Yeah.
And most people think only of the people they know in a work-related context. That list might include people in other departments or previous colleagues or vendors or customers or people they met at a conference, but that's sort of the limit of the visual that we get when we say your network. But you miss out all the people that you know from church or from school and your kids' school or a leisure activity and the dry cleaner and your next door neighbor and all sorts of other people that you actually do know, but you don't think of in a work context or in a network context.
Right. And those are still people in your primary network, right? Those are still people that you know. Then there's this entire world that opens up that's your secondary network. The people that, you know, are the people that your network knows. So by definition, one's network includes, however indirectly, the networks of all the people in your network. It's this web of people that are all somehow connected. If there's 100 people in your network and they each have 100 people in their network, I'm really glad we're using easy math.
Yes, there's right? only easy math in it.
But that means that your network actually consists of 10,000 people. That's crazy.
It's crazy. When I wrote that and then I went to Google to do the math because I can't do math, I was like, wait a minute, I must have put those numbers in wrong. But yes,
I double checked it. I was like, there's no way.
It's 10,000 people.
Yeah. And to be clear, by double checking it, I asked my kindergartner because he, he knows 100 times 100, surprisingly. Some people have thousands of people in their primary network alone, which multiplies your network exponentially. We've seen that, right? Through this math. So now do you understand why building your own network is so important? When you think of adding 5 people to your network, you're grossly underestimating the growth of your network. You're adding thousands, perhaps even just by adding 5 new connections directly.
It's amazing math. And connecting through someone in your primary network gives you access to everyone in their contact book. And if we do the math again, if you have 10 people in your network and each of those people have 10, that's a nice low number, then you have 100 people in your secondary network. And the difference that makes is amazing. If you think, having 10 people in your network, try and find someone who knows something about transistors, just as a random topic. You probably can't find someone, you know, in the 10 people. But 100 people, that's a much more likely that you'll find someone who knows something about transistors. And if you had 100 people in your network and everybody else had 100, you've got 10,000 people. The likelihood of you finding someone who knows something about transistors is just, it's got to be like 95%, hasn't it?
Yeah, you're increasing the odds, again, exponentially, that someone could be helpful. So when fax machines were first invented, I got really excited to talk about fax machines. When fax machines were first invented, they were pretty useless. Sure, you had a fax machine and you could send a fax, but unless the person that you wanted to send a fax to had a fax machine to receive it, your fax machine is just a really nice, overpriced paperweight with lots of cool buttons on it.
Exactly.
The more people that had fax machines, the more useful they became. The same goes for phones, email addresses. I mean, that's the internet, right? We think of as a network. This is called the network effect. It's a phenomenon whereby increased numbers of people or participants improve the value of a good or a service.
And when you add one person, as we said, you're not just adding that one person, but all the people they can reach. So imagine an office building with 1,000 people in it, but no fax machines. You can't reach them by fax because they don't have a fax machine. But when one person in the building gets in, you can fax that person and you can have someone run up and down the building and give them faxes. And now you've got access to 1,000 people just because one person bought a fax machine.
Yeah.
And adding one person to your network is just like getting a fax machine in that one building. Gives you access to a really wide range of people.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. So this is the same kind of magic that makes that concept of like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, mm-hmm. right? And Erdos numbers, is that right?
I would say Erdos, but I don't know that I'm right.
Erdos numbers. Okay. Kevin Bacon, I know for sure, mm-hmm. okay? Because Kevin Bacon and Paul Erdos worked so prolifically and with so many people, you can go back and you can link them. You can, you know, look at any actor and go back several degrees and you'll find a connection to Kevin Bacon. Why can't I say Kevin Bacon? So from their perspective, their primary network is huge. If one of them was in your network, your secondary network would be huge too, because you would get access to everyone that they know.
Yeah. You literally only need Kevin Bacon to be your friend.
Exactly.
You've got access to everybody in Hollywood, right?
Kevin, if you're listening.
The important thing about this whole network thing and getting really excited about having access to all these people is that your network is a golden goose. And in many cases, the person that you know in your network can't help you, but they can connect you with somebody in their network. That's the point, right? You use your secondary network. So let's just do an example. Let's say I have a contact whose name is Amanda, beginning of the alphabet. Amanda is close to me in my primary network. And Amanda knows someone who's called Zach at the end of the alphabet, so far away, but he doesn't know me. But because I know Amanda, he's in my secondary network. And when I think of something I think Amanda can help me with, I reach out to her. And when she can't help, she says, "Do you know, that's not quite my thing, but I know someone who can help you. I know someone who it is their thing." And she primes Zach by, you know, hopefully sending him an email or a text and say, "Hey, when is going to call?" I don't have to have a relationship with Zach to get the help from Zach, because I'm using my relationship with Amanda as my go-between. And my relationship with Zach relies entirely on my relationship with Amanda to start with. It's Amanda saying, "Hey, I know Wendy and yeah, she's worth talking to," or, you know, "I want you to help her because she's helped me," or whatever. It's only because I have a relationship with Amanda that I get Zach's help.
This is where a magical thing can happen. That's probably, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it truly is. It's an interesting thing, because now if you treat Zach well, right, and you establish a relationship with Zach, you can add Zach to your primary network. He moves in one circle. I don't know, I'm just making up the circle thing. But if you treat him poorly, or maybe not even bad, like, but you're not professional, or, you know, you don't make the best first impression, mm-hmm. right? You could lose your potential relationship with him and potentially hurt your relationship with Amanda. That could actually cost you your relationship with Amanda. Certainly, the next time you reach out for help, she's going to be much less likely to share a contact with you, right? Based on how you treated Zach.
Exactly. Am I going to help you the next time? Not if you treat my friends badly.
No, of course not.
Right.
But if you treat them both well, you benefit from your relationship with both of them. And there's an additional benefit that people miss, which is that network effect, right? Because now you bring Zach in.
Yeah. And now I've got Zach is my primary network. I know I've got Zach's secondary network as well.
Exactly. And you have no idea how big Zach's secondary network is.
No, exactly. Lucky me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, access to people's networks is like money. It's neither good nor evil inherently. You can use it for good. You can solve problems or serve society or help other people, or you can use it for evil, just to help yourself or even to destroy others if that's what you want to do. Now, the problem with this is that's killing the golden goose.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who are not familiar, I don't know how universal this story is. So if you're not familiar with this story, a cottager and his wife had a hen that laid a golden egg every day. And they suppose that the hen must have this lump of gold inside it because it's laying golden eggs, right? So it must have a big well of gold somewhere inside. And so in order to get that gold, they killed the goose. And then they found that the inside of it was just like every other goose. And so now they don't have any golden eggs because the goose is dead, and they don't have the gold they thought they were going to get because it wasn't there. And so now they've killed the golden goose and they're worse off. So it's a warning against short-sighted destruction of a valuable resource.
Yeah.
The valuable resource being your network, and the short-sighted destruction being treating people in it badly or even not professionally.
Right, exactly. And everyone has a network, and yours should be bigger, because bigger is always better in this case. But the bottom line is you have one. The next step is to treat it and everyone in it like the golden goose that they are. Which brings us to our next point. Professionalism always. Treating someone like the golden goose that they are is just basic professionalism. The following list of rules might seem unnecessary, but just like traffic laws, right? We know them, but we don't always follow them.
Right. You know, we know that you're supposed to do the speed limit. And there's good reasons for it. And we know we're capable. But sometimes other stuff gets on top of you in the same way that, you know, other stuff gets on top of you and you don't reply to an email or whatever. So the first rule is do the work. So if you're the one needing help, then you have to do the work. So for example, you shuffle your calendar to make it easy for someone to meet with you. And you do the work of finding the convenient time. And please don't ask for help and then send someone a Calendly link so that they have to fit themselves into the 2.5 hours that you've designated as, you know, connection time.
Right.
That is not doing the work. That's making someone else do the work. They're helping you. You have to do the work.
Yeah. That means that you're going to travel to meet them, right? If you're going to meet up with them somewhere to talk about something or to, you know, discuss how they can help you, then you go to them, right? You go to a place that's convenient to them. If they live across town, you're not going to say, hey, let's meet up for coffee 5 minutes from my house. You're going to say, where's a place that's closer convenient for you? Let me come to you, right? That's you traveling to them. You arrange the Zoom or the Teams link and you send the invite. You do the work, right? You create the link. You do the stuff so that they don't have to. You make it easy for them to help you.
Yeah, and whichever Zoom, Teams, whichever one, Skype, whichever they choose is the one you do. Work it out. None of these things are hard. And
right. There's
a million YouTube videos on how to use them. Work it out.
Oh, yeah.
Do it this way.
You don't say, here's a Teams link, and they say, well, I'm sorry, I don't have Teams. Can you use Zoom? And say, no, I'm sorry. I use Teams.
Yeah.
No.
No, don't make it hard for them.
Yeah.
Okay, so you pay for coffee, lunch, dinner, whatever meal there is, whatever thing there is to be paid for, you make the payment and you pay the tip. We're thanking people for helping us. Even if the help isn't helpful, we're thanking them for meeting us and spending their time with us. And that means we do the work.
Yeah, that also means that you provide any documents or helpful information in plenty of time for the person to have reviewed them. You make sure that they have access before that they need it, right? You make sure that they are set up to be able to, you know, help as soon as possible. And you eliminate hurdles, right?
Yes,
you eliminate
exactly.
those roadblocks.
Hey, folks, we haven't said much about our new Manager Tools disk product, but you should know that our December effective communicator conferences will use MT Disk rather than the Wiley product. And what's interesting about that is we have effective relationships built in to the product. So that saves you a bunch of money not having to buy effective relationships. And our MT Disk is focused on helping you be more effective, not just telling you how you tend to behave. That's only part one. Part two is, okay, what do you do with that? Because it's all about behavior, and effective behavior sometimes means making small changes in how you behave when you're working with people who have different behavioral tendencies than you. Come learn about it at the Effective Communicator Conference.
Next one, honor your commitments. So if you said you'll email today, email today. If you said meet at 10 a.m., then meet at 10 a.m. and not 10 after. If you said you'll have your resume ready, have it ready. And if you can't do so, let the person know in time. Somebody is planning to be somewhere or do something based on what you've said you're going to do, right? Say somebody says to me, hey, can you look at my resume? Someone in somebody's network, because they know I do that. And I say yes. And they say, hey, I've got a job interview in a week. So, you know, can you look at my resume? And I say yes. And they say, I'll send it on Friday. Now, in my head, I'm like, okay, Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, I can do that. Now I'll just fit that in and blah, 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 right? If they don't send it till Monday, now I have to rearrange my calendar. I've been thinking, hey, did I not get that email? Checking my email, like thinking, did it go into spam? Like, I'm wasting my time, my efforts, because someone didn't do what they said they were going to do. And that doesn't put me in a favorable, you know, am I going to put more effort in for someone who's wasted some of my time, even if it was not very much time at all? No, you know,
yeah.
The person that says they're going to do it and does it, that's the person I'm going to put most effort into.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a grandiose thing about, you know, showing someone that you're worth working with or trying to prove that you're worthy of their help. This is just showing due respect for someone, whether or not they're going to be helpful or not, right? You don't necessarily know. Hopefully they are, but this is just about showing respect and professionalism. Yeah. And this includes actually reaching out if you ask for a connection to be made. You know, when you ask Amanda if she knows anyone who could help you with a problem, there's a step that she takes before giving you Zach's contact details. She, you know, we hope, contacts Zach and says, hey, that, you know, so-and-so will be calling or emailing and getting in touch with you. And Zach now knows, right, that he counts this as a favor for Amanda, being done for Amanda. So she owes him, mm-hmm. right? And he's expecting you to email or call. And when you don't, for whatever reason, you're wasting Amanda's favor and you're leaving Zach hanging. If you no longer need the help, that happens sometimes, mm-hmm. right? Then you just say so. You email or you call or you leave a message for them both and you just say, hey, Amanda, thank you for giving me Zach's contact details. Fortunately, I solved the problem. I appreciate you reaching out for me. I will call and let Zach know the position too. He sounds like a great guy. I hope we can all meet soon. Thank you again for being willing to connect us. And then to Zach, you would say, hey, Zach, this is Robert. Amanda gave me your contact details to help me with this problem. And thank you for being willing to speak with me. Fortunately, I've actually solved the problem. Amanda was very complimentary about you, and I hope that we'll have reason to talk again in the future. Once again, thank you for being willing to help.
Yeah, easy.
That's all.
There's nothing easy to it. And it's not hard. There's a subset of people who send you a note the day before a meeting and say, hey, just confirming our meeting tomorrow. We're meeting at this time on Zoom or whatever, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
I always think those people are totally on it. And there's something about calling and saying, hey, I don't need you anymore, that has that kind of connotation of being totally on it. I am closing every single loop in my life.
Right.
I am.
no stone left unturned. Right, I am all over it. Yeah.
And the professionals are immune, and the next time you do need Zach, or you know, then Zach's already got a favorable impression of you because you got your stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the next one is gratitude, and this one makes me sad.
Oh.
Yeah. Because in order to be the one-eyed man in the land of the blind, as Mark always says, you don't have to do very much here. You would think a thank you email would be the very least you could do. But in our experience, you can actually do less because people do all the time. Now, you help them out. They don't even send you an email thank you. You put them in contact with someone. You send them some documents. You know, Google something for them. It's apparently nobody can Google. But you do those things and you don't even get a thank you. And it makes me sad that that's the level of where we are in life.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of you that don't know, Wendy is an expert Googler. And every time I ask Wendy for help on something, she solves it in less than the blink of an eye because she just Googles and she knows exactly how to search and what to find. And I always have this dichotomy of emotions, this overwhelming sense of thank you, yes, awesome, now that's fixed, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also feel this guilt of, did I have to waste 30 seconds of Wendy's time because I don't know how to Google? Gosh.
I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's that the internet didn't exist when I was born and I grew up with it. I remember when it was really bad and therefore I can Google well, but anyway.
Yeah. That's how I found manager tools. I Googled it. I mean, there is evidence that I can Google.
You know, and in some cases, you don't get anything from a call or an email or even a meeting from someone's contact. And sometimes you get something, but not what you wanted. I had this with my dad. I was asking him how to do something, and he was giving me all these answers. And I said, no, I don't want you to help me do it the way you think it should be done. I want you to help me do it the way I want to do it.
Right.
And it was very frustrating. But if they're not your dad, show gratitude anyway. That person has helped you. They've done their best for you, even if they can't see that you want to be helped for the way you want to do it. Even if their advice doesn't apply for whatever reason, they've put themselves out. Show gratitude for the effort, not the result.
Yes, there's something to be grateful for there. Yeah, great point. The next is follow up. When someone helps you, it creates what David Allen calls an open loop, and Wendy just referenced closing those loops, also called the Zygarde effect. It's like a post-it note in your brain that you started something, but you didn't finish it. And it's just cluttering up your brain with these post-it notes that reduce productivity. I remember my favorite line, I think David Allen put it in the book, but I remember watching after I read Getting Things Done, lots of interviews with him. And I remember him saying, or I read it, he said, your brain is for having ideas, not storing ideas.
Yes.
And it just is a drain on your productivity. So leaving someone with one of these post-its and this idea in their brain, it reduces their productivity. And that's just not nice for you to do to them, right? What's more is it breaks the do the work rule, right? That we referenced already when you force them to follow up rather than letting them know what happened.
Yeah. So let's give some examples just to, you know, the post-it in the brain idea. So let's say that Margaret is arranging a team offsite and she's been asked to source some travel mugs with the company logo and the offsite dates on them. And she asked Tom, who got some great mugs a couple of years ago, for the details of where he got them. And so Tom sends her his contact's name, the website, and a couple of sentences about what he learned about the best way to do this. And what Tom's done is like a 3-minute email. It's not work, you know. Hopefully he had a good system that allowed him to look this stuff up in moments. But periodically, he'll see a note from Margaret, or he'll see the mug he ordered before, or something else that prompts the thought, I wonder how Margaret got on with that vendor.
Yeah.
And it would take Margaret less time than it took Tom to send him a note and say, hey, thanks for the info. They worked out great. Your contact was fantastic. Or, hey, I just wanted to let you know we didn't get any mugs for the event after all, but I've saved your info for next time. And that stops Tom being embarrassed when he calls his contact next time and say, hey, how did you get on with Margaret? The guy's like, what?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And it's In this example, it's a really small one. So let's go for a bigger one.
Yeah. So a bigger example would be Clive. Let's say Clive wants to move into web design. He's currently a front-end developer. So he talks to a friend who connects him with Debbie, who made a similar move a couple of years ago. Debbie meets Clive for coffee, tells him her story, gives him a couple of pointers, reviews his resume, and gives him the name of two of her contacts who helped her. Clive sends a nice thank you note the day after, and then nothing. Debbie has spent time with Clive, shared her knowledge, and left a little bit of skin in the game. If Clive gets a new role, the one that he wanted, he's benefited greatly from Debbie's advice. And we think you would agree with us that he owes her more than a thank you note, even if he doesn't get what he wants. Letting Debbie know what the outcome or that, you know, what that outcome is seems only just decent, right? That's the right thing to do. Clive might have consulted 20 or 30 people, and getting back to all of them is time consuming, especially with this new job. But those people gave of themselves for him. And following up, closing that loop, is a low exertion courtesy.
Literally, as we were reading this, I thought of somebody that I helped who hasn't got back to me. And it just went through my brain of like, I wonder how that person got on.
Yeah, you just don't know.
You just don't know.
You would like to know, good or bad.
Yeah, and I would like to know if I help someone. Maybe I spend my time giving out bad advice, in which case somebody ought to tell me.
Yeah, that is. I can tell you that is absolutely not true. But yeah, I can see what your point is, right? You would want to know, am I being effective? Is that helpful? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and if you're in Clive's position and you do have a lot of people that you should have followed up with, write that list right now and follow up with each person. Like, just do one a week.
Yeah.
And you'll get there. Even if the note was from years and years ago, send the note or make the call anyway. It means as much years later as it does a few months later, especially if it was life-changing. And as I wrote this, I always say the second best manager I ever had after Mark was just the best manager and the perfect person for me right then. And as I wrote this, I remembered how grateful I was to her. And I got on Facebook and I typed out like three paragraphs of, you changed my life. And, you know, I got an amazing reply because, you know, she was grateful and she was like, you were awesome. And I was like, I was a pain in the neck, but you were awesome.
Well, that goes back to our guidance on thank you notes, right? Mm-hmm. It's never too late. You can always send a thank you note, even years later, especially a note that closes a loop and lets you know, hey, by the way, I never caught up with you on this, but wanted to let you know this is how it went.
Yes. I always say thank you notes grow in the mail because when you put them in the mail, they're only like this big. But when they arrive, they're your whole heart big. You know, I'm making big arm gestures that nobody can see but Andrew. But they just, a thank you note has so much more power when it arrives than it did when you dropped it in the mail.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your network is one of your biggest assets. It's as vital as the skills and abilities you have. It's as good as the training, the college degree, the, you know, fancy stethoscope, whatever you have to work with. It's as important to you as that. It's there to be used to help you solve problems and make the world better. So treat it and the people in it well, and you have a force multiplier.
Awesome.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with something new. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.